FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it is 6617. So if you're into the Kabbalah or numerology, that might be a significant date for you. I don't know. But what I do know is that currently Bitcoin is trading over $2,700. It's making a straight line for the heavens. I am reminded of Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, who said that the tree does not grow to the sky. Well, maybe this time is different. Let's check in with Danielle Park and get the real story. Danielle, welcome back.
Hey, Kerry.
Hey, so look, the stock market keeps going up, but compared to Bitcoin, the stock market is a very gentle upslope that looks like it could continue on forever. But Bitcoin is parabolic. And, you know, we were talking earlier before the call. I've seen a lot of bubble markets in my life, and I've never seen one that actually kept going to infinity. Is it going to be different this time with Bitcoin?
Well, I see no fundamental reason for any of the moves that have been happening in most asset prices in the past, couple of years, and certainly in the past few months year to date. So I, you know, your guess is as good as mine. We're in the throw darts and guess, you know, realm. And the thing I think that is the logic based thing that I come back to in the midst of madness, because I'm in the midst of madness often, but it is simply how does one pay one's bills? You know, so what do you need to buy groceries? What do you need to pay your utilities and property taxes and things? And that currency is the currency that you need. So if you're an American, it's primarily US dollars. And if you're a Canadian, it's primarily Canadian dollars. And, you know, Bitcoin, it requires the internet to remain intact. It requires, you know, freedom from cyber hacking. It seems to me it's a very concentrated risk play because so many things technically could go wrong that would evaporate your entries. And if that's the case, you know, that this premise that it's worth 3,000 or it was worth 2,000 last month and it's worth 3,000 this month. I mean, there's really this isn't investing. None of this is investing, Kerry. This is all just kind of wailing away. And another fact-based system that I find comfort in is looking at capital flows in the world and appreciating that the reason we've got the everything bubble today, which is literally in pretty much every single asset place that one can find funds, it's gone into lunatic fringe mode. And I think it's strictly, you know, the bailouts in 2008-09, the QEs of the world that has happened repeatedly since has created this excess liquidity, which we've spoke of many times. It's not needed in the real economy. It's superfluous. So what it does is it circulates through various spots, whether that be art, whether that be commodities, whether that be, you know, junk debt.
Collectible cars, whatever.
Real estate. I mean, you guys, your real estate index is right back up at the peak, as is your U.S. household debt levels, hit a new high in Q1 of 17 at something like just under 13 trillion, I think you guys are at. And that's driven by a big jump in auto debt and student debt. Canada, the same thing. We've had $2 trillion now, new high in household debt. New study said more than 51% of mortgage holders in Canada are within a hair's breadth of a financial collapse. We've got ludicrous valuations that are not affordable except by virtue of this excess liquidity and free-flowing credit. And, you know, where else is it pooled? It's pooled into the exchange-traded funds, passive allocation strategies, whether it be, you know, robo-advisors, passive funds, ETFs. Everyone's focused on making sure they were paying a minimum fee for participation in security markets, and that's all fine and well. But the problem is no one's looking at any risk. So this is just trillions and trillions of dollars of indiscriminate buying. And the problem with that is when they go to sell, who will be left to buy? And we know that they will want to sell. We know that there will be, you know, not just because demographically and practically at zero rates, people need cash flow and literally currency to pay their bills, which means that demographically, those holding all the assets right now are going to be cashing out a certain amount every year just to live. So we know that that is going to drive some selling, but also, just as you well know, having been alive, you know, more than 50 years and watched cycles for the past, you know, few decades, there's always a tipping point where that indiscriminate buying becomes indiscriminate selling. And then who's going to buy off the ETFs when everybody's in, when cash levels are the lowest they've ever been, you know, back below where they were in 2000. You know, we've just created a complete disaster for those who think they're investing. For those who think they're speculating and think they're geniuses and all that, well, good luck to you and you get what you deserve in the end. But for those that think they're actually, you know, doing investing for their retirement or for the children's education, those are the ones that I have real angst for, because they are going to suffer a massive drawdown at some point here from holding these incredibly risky exposed assets, being fully in, thinking that that's investing. And that's just, you know, throwing the dice up the table. It's got nothing to do with valuations or logic or math or any of it.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I've been a genius a couple of times, but then afterwards I realized how stupid I really was. And it feels so great when you look at your portfolio and every day it's going up, you know, like during the dot-com era. And you think, wow, you know, like I'm thinking, gee, I could retire. If it keeps up like this in a year or two, I'm going to be retired. But it didn't. And then it left me feeling very stupid. And you know, I've wised up a little bit since then. But it's human nature, Danielle. Isn't it really human nature? And it's fear and greed, the fear of your underfunded retirement. And the greed is, well, the market just keeps going up. I don't know why. It just keeps doing it. I'm just going to put my money in there, because it's fear of underfunded retirement. It's fear of missing out on an opportunity. And then the greed kicks in. Gee, my retirement's going to be so much better now because my portfolio has gone up 50% in the past year. But again,
ill-gotten gains and the lure of easy money, they're a very perverting influence on the human psyche, unfortunately. And it is timeless, and it is cross-generational, cross-border, cross-race, sex, the whole thing. We're just all infected with that, or can be infected with that. And I think the more you're aware of that vulnerability, and the more you set up rules against it. But that goes back to doing some actual work on top-down assessment of what, you know, cash you have, what cash you need, what, you know, in what timeline, how much you're saving. I mean, these are very sort of rudimentary math-based exercises. And you have to look at, you know, if you're thinking about retiring, you have to say, okay, if I was to put this all in safe deposits and I could live on this amount of income, yes or no? And if the answer is no, then the answer, the real truth is you don't go throwing it at riskier things in hopes that'll make have your cake and eat it too. You know, that is just the death spiral. And unfortunately, that's what the financial industry sells to people, because it's this, you know, they're making a deal with the devil. They've got people who tell them they don't need to save enough. And yes, they can retire next week and have it all like in the commercials. But in truth, especially because of the QE infected bubbles that are everywhere, whatever asset class, and the low yields that have resulted from, you know, trillions of indiscriminate buying, this risk equation is all one-sided here. And what we know for sure is that at these valuation levels, historically, on all the most reliable data and valuation metrics, you get negative returns for at least a decade after that. And so from current levels, just as there was in 2000, we're there and worse as we were at the tech bomb peak in 2000. From there, we did in fact have negative returns all the way through 2012, if you recall. It wasn't until the QE, you know, expansion really kicked in that things went back above the prior peak of 2000. And in many other markets, like in the Canadian market, we're just barely there. And in the US, you guys overshot by more because you had greater conviction and you know, contamination in this euphoria that spread everywhere through the banking system, through the investment banks, through the share buybacks, you know, which have been blatant market manipulation, basically buying off shareholders through compensation, whether that be dividends or equity buybacks. That's where all that liquidity has gone. And again, the distorting impact of that has been unbelievable, because on a valuation basis, on an investment basis, all it's done is degrade the quality and prospects for return. Again, in a short-term window, it's made the weak and the foolish look strong and wise. And that is always a problem, because they're now leading everyone who, you know, with this silly mocking, you know, assumption that they're all smart and anyone who does the math is a fool. So we know how that ends. And it's just, it's been a trying period for anybody that's, you know, I'm a big, you know, energy efficiency person. I get really excited about all the technology and advancement that is here now, that is available, that people can, you know, literally lower utility bills to zero and all that wonderful stuff. And I just noticed, though, that, you know, you guys in the States have got another, it was an article on Bloomberg, Americans pouring money into their homes like it's 1990s again. And, you know, I'm thinking, yay, to go off the grid to make themselves net zero, or just to buy bigger closets for more shoes, you know, probably a little bit of the first, but a lot of the second. And unfortunately, that's all dead money. It's all a waste. It doesn't improve efficiency. It's not productive. And so round and round we go in this wasted era. And you know, we need to get to the boom phase where smart things start happening, and which are going to actually improve the standard of living and improve the productivity in the economy and households. And we know what those things are, but this period has been a great waste, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I can give you an example. Well, I had to put money into my house last week, even though I didn't really want to. My AC unit died. And it turned out that unit was 16 years old. So I didn't buy the most expensive, technologically advanced unit, just a middle of the road unit. And that thing is going to save me probably $120 to $150 a month. And this is over 10 years. And these things keep getting better and better. I mean, you could get them to the point where costs like $50, $60 a month to cool your home in Florida. That's a super expensive unit. But that technology will come down.
If you get solar on your roof, you could run it for zero. Like, I'm telling you, the technology and the efficiency is mind-boggling. I've been we did an energy evaluation at our house. And, you know, many of the systems that we've used, I was replacing, for example, a pump on the septic system, 4 years old, and I can get one today that uses a quarter of the energy that the ones that were available 5 years ago use. I mean, this is just, you talk about parabolic. This is parabolic I'm excited about in terms of the leaps and bounds that are going on right now. Now, Bitcoin and you know, buying things that are wasted money, you know, I think that's all going to end in the usual way. But the people who are going to get actual traction coming out of this period are the ones who use the really low rates to pay down debt and get out of debt. If you're going to invest in your house to improve efficiency and lower your costs, there's a lot of that going on. And it's amazing, too, because, you know, this narrative or discussion seems to be all about, you know, what international countries are agreeing to and whether or not they're in or out of the Paris Accord. That's really not the point here. What I find is when I'm calling these companies talking about what's available, everybody is on the same page. They're like, oh, yeah, know what you're doing. Net zero. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My buddy's got a pool and a hot tub and they're all running off his solar on his roof. And like, it's everywhere. This is the biggest probably business boom we've ever like had in my lifetime, for sure.
And the beauty is, it's being a better steward of assets, of resources, because like an internal combustion car, the highest efficiency they can be is in the 20%+. And even that's pushing it. That's like with a hybrid. You look at the electric car, it's 60%+. Just that's the first one, really, the Tesla, 60%+ efficient. And, you know, like I said, my friend's got one. He spends $30 a month on electric. And the other thing is your car never gets dated. It will get dated in certain respects, like, you know, the self-driving thing, because they keep advancing it. But your car gets updated, gets software updates every week, and it keeps getting better and better. Now, my car from two different, very prestigious automobile manufacturers, it gets crappier over time, Danielle.
Yeah,
it degrades.
Yeah, exactly right. And yeah. I see everything now like that. Like not only, you know, obviously Tesla led the way, but all the car manufacturers are rolling it out. Volkswagen's got all these really great cars. I mean, this is everywhere. And so now when you look around, you know, even when I see a beautiful house being built in my neighborhood, if it's not net zero, I go, what a dinosaur, what a shame, because, you know, it's here now. It's not like, you know, futuristic. They could do it now while they're building and have zero energy bills thereafter. And I believe you want to add value to a house in terms of resale, do that to your house, because then somebody, when they do come to buy it, whether it's 5, 10 years from now or whatever it is, how about that for a plug? You know, yeah. Hey, here's the house. Not only is it gorgeous, it'll cost you nothing to run it. Pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hey, I'm all in favor of it. The roof that Musk is selling right now, the Tesla is selling, was Solar City, but they merged the companies. Mm. It's a little costly right now.
Yeah, but you know, everything starts, right? Hey. Everything starts really expensive, and it works down as demand builds up. That's just the way it is.
But they look really good. They look amazing. Those roofs, the solar roofs. You have to get a battery pack. To a battery wall or whatever they call it to go
along
with it.
Which has the inverter built right in, by the way.
Yeah, it's great.
So efficient. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. It's really, you know, this is the future. No question about it.
So that's the thing that gives me hope and keeps me going. Because really, as I've said before, trained as a fundamental analyst and a lawyer, I have a certain skill set. I can take measurements. I can assess risk. That's my job.
Right.
And the risk today is so Looney Tunes, and the fools are running around with all the answers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of sit back and go, geez, I always say this, you don't need a professional to do indiscriminate buying for you, you know, just wail away. But the problem is, realize that you are doing so at the peak of the worst bubble ever in human history with your life savings, with nothing to do with investing prospects. In fact, with negative return prospects for at least the next decade and probably longer. And the only way that you can do wise in this environment is to be countercyclical to that, is to build up liquidity, build up savings, get rid of your debt, do the opposite of what the, you know, ill-informed masses are doing. Do the opposite of what the financial industry is trying to talk you into every day. And in doing so, you will be one of the few people who is able to buy when all the ETFs are being forced through redemptions and panic to liquidate this nonsense. And then you'll have a chance to do something that will set you up for the decade or more after that with excellent yields, much lower capital risk. So you'll come out of this fire sale ahead. Unfortunately, you know, you have to get that message now before the real downside hits, or else you won't be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, that it's been so long since that decline, since the last one, that a lot of the people on Wall Street in the financial industry, Danielle, weren't even around. In fact, a lot of them haven't even lived through a real correction, let alone a bear market.
And I remember.
That's scary.
But, you know, it's always about six to eight years. Like, you know, five is a short cycle. 6 to 8 is kind of a longish cycle. So it's always, I think that's precisely the point. For humans, that's an eternity. So, you know, that's why people do this wrong and are wired to get, you know, disaster as an outcome each time, because they always think it's different. They always are oblivious to the lessons of the prior cycle. It goes on long enough that it just, you know, the people who got creamed the last time get sucked in the final chapter of it. They come back in, that puts in the parabolic top, and then that's the same ones who have to liquidate and end up selling at the bottom in panic. And that's where the wise money comes back in and picks up the nickels again. And, you know, this just the system. It's the way it's set up. So I think, you know, I remember in, you know, 2000 and then 2007, by 2007-08, people had forgotten the lessons of 2000 as well. And actually, I remember doing media interviews, you know, on news channels, and they would say, well, like, how bad could it get? What do you mean we're overvalued? Like, how bad could it get? Well, you know, minus 50 to minus 80% drop. And they'd be like, oh, wow, why would you even say such a thing? Like, it just upset their homeostasis. And I would say, well, I'm not saying, and I'm saying historically, this is the normal outcome. From this type of valuation level, that is the normal outcome. So, you know, it's not because I'm saying it, it's just what it is. And, you know, these are people who work in the business every day or interview people every day. You'd think they would have some sense of context, but no, they don't. They have short memories, maybe by purpose, because maybe if they were aware, they wouldn't be able to flog it every day like they do.
Well, you know, it reminds me, Danielle, in the 20s, when the market went parabolic, everyone was saying it's a new era. Mm-hmm. You know, if you read the history books from then, it's a new era, which is another way of saying this time is different. And you know what? In going through watching all these bubbles, this time is always the same. It's never different. It's always the same. And so if you've been fortunate enough to accumulate a lot of gains at this point, you need
or just
to,
make back your losses even. If you've made back your losses, which is primarily what this cycle's done, 90% of the time you're making back your losses from the last cycle. So if you're anywhere back the hole or even slightly in the black, whatever, for God's sake, take your chips and understand what game you're playing here.
Yeah. And then when the market really gets slammed, hey, there will be dividend plays that will help your retirement.
Well, maybe that's exactly right. That's where the
12% on a stock.
That's where the bulk of investment gains have come over the last, you know, 150 years. It came from the dividend floor. 4% of the data of the return that's quoted on the S&P or the Dow, 4% of that was in dividends and dividend growth at the rate of inflation every year thereafter. And only 2% of that long-term rate of return that's quoted even came from capital gains. Yeah. You know, so really the share value over time only goes up in about accordance with the rate of inflation, about 2%. And the bulk of the return came from the dividends. And the assumption that the dividend was reinvested every time and not spent or withdrawn or used on fees, which again, very unnatural, you know, not a real a reflection of what goes on. But if you're gonna try and use these asset markets for your income production, then you need to at least be aware of that.
Yeah, that was the only thing I did right in 2008, 2009 was liquidate all of my so-called growth stocks and put them into high yielding MLPs and other things. But that is not like a one-stop investment either, because they all got slammed 5-6 years later when the price of oil took a hit and not gas. But some of them still kept their value, managed to get out of there. But hey, I don't know what's next. I can't say that, but I do know that history, as Mark Twain said, doesn't repeat. It rhymes, and the rhymes are really unavoidable now. You can just see it. Anyway, make sure you check out Danielle's work over at jugglingdynamite.com. Her energy commentary is really good and really timely. I think we are on the crux of a revolution. You see it in the higher end, like the Tesla solar roofs and all of these battery packs that you can get for your house to capture that solar energy for when the sun goes down or when it's raining like it is right now in Florida for the past week, pouring nonstop. You know, then you have a little bit of problem, but that's going to be addressed. We're going to see it soon. And email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.